the president in Indianapolis, why this trip was different. Mike Pence for governor, the unusual campaign kickoff. Mitch Daniels takes education reform to Washington, developments in the Charlie White case, primary election results, winners and losers, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending May 6, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, President Barack Obama started the week by issuing orders to kill Osama bin Laden. He finished it with a trip to Indianapolis, visiting Allison Transmission. It was a stop rescheduled from April.
This is where the American economy is rebuilding, where we are regaining our footing. Now, we just went through one of the worst recessions in our history, worst in our lifetimes.
Why is Barack Obama visiting Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, was this a campaign visit?
I think any visit from between now and the election is a campaign visit. I said from the beginning I didn't think he was riding off Indiana. And it's a good story to tell. I mean, you're talking about clean energy, and you're talking about Allison Transmission. You're talking about the batteries from Enerdell. You're talking about substantially increasing the market for American-made manufactured products. It's a great story. At the same time, you're weaning us away from dependence on foreign oil. It's a good story to be telling.
Yet it was strictly a policy speech. No mention of Osama bin Laden. No mention of the campaign.
It doesn't have to. I mean, Ann's right. All of these appearances, when you're the President of the United States, you never stop campaigning, especially after you just set up your committee for the reelection campaign. That comes with the territory. I mean, that's a given. But he doesn't have to mention that stuff. And congratulations to him on pulling the trigger on that mission to kill Osama bin Laden. I mean, that's a great thing for America, I think, right now. So he should be congratulated for that. But yeah, he's going to campaign and take advantage of his incumbency. And I think he's smart not to give up on any state that he won last time.
He went from here to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, to meet with Navy SEALs. So there's going to be a bin Laden headline for him out of the day. But does it surprise you that he didn't at least make mention of it?
Not necessarily, because I think he needs to show, and the White House realizes he needs to show, that he has a laser focus on the issue of rising gas prices and the U.S. reliance on fossil fuels, which in a way could be tied into what's happening in the Middle East, as more and more people are saying, you know, America could be held hostage by foreign powers that control a lot of fossil fuels and may or may not like to supply us on any given occasion. So I think he wants to show that this is an issue that he has command of, that he has a plan. You know, he's very critical of the tax breaks that were given to large oil companies and saying they're already, I'm paraphrasing here, they're already gouging us at the pump. They don't need to gouge us through the tax system as well. These are messages, I think, in this, because of the rising gas prices, that will resonate.
And you know, he said that they need to take that money and use it for investing into new technology.
Well, in the pool reports, you know, the White House Traveling Press Corps sends out pool reports every 10 minutes or 15 minutes during the trip. You know, who is at the bottom of the steps when he gets off the airplane, you know, with whom he's shaking hands, or are his safety glasses on. The most interesting point in that, I thought, is that it pointed out that the motorcade on the way to Allison from the airport passed a fuel station or a gas station with $4.17 gas and another one with $4.14 gas. That, I thought, was the most pertinent part of that whole press report.
Gas is higher here than in many parts of the country. There were a lot of high-level Democrats there, some people who won mayoral primaries on Tuesday. It had much more political surroundings than when he went to Kokomo. Yet the Republican governor and the mayor greeted him at the airport. I mean, is there anything to be made of any of that?
Well, Brad Stevens from Butler was also meeting him at the airport. So I think, you know, he's covering all his bases. He doesn't miss a beat in all of this. I think it is, you know, it is a political appearance as well. And the politician's appearance there was, I think, a big part of that. But that image before those transmissions with the big flags, and you'll see that over and over, because that will be the heart of the campaign next time. It will be the economy, and that will be a big part of it. And you'll see that image all the time.
I think the more interesting thing about this is that this time, what is this, the fifth or sixth visit?
Fifth as president.
Okay, the first four, the governor was conflicted out, wasn't able to make it. This time he managed to show up. It's interesting when the world.
You think he wanted to get in the photo?
I think that the news of the week, he wanted to have a little part of that rub off on him, I think.
Well, he was going to be there 2 weeks ago when the appearance that got canceled. The governor was going to be there.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So,
although when your approval rating nationally goes from 46% to 57%, as it did in the CBS New York Times poll this week in the span of a couple of weeks, all of a sudden it's a magnetic effect that you have on politicians both stripes.
They want to be there.
Sure.
His approval rating going up and accomplishing the mission of killing Osama bin Laden, how much does that weigh on Mitch Daniels' decision-making process?
I don't think it does at all. The real questions are going to be the economy, what we're doing with the deficit, what we're doing with spending in this government, and those are issues that are right in Mitch Daniels' wheelhouse.
Yeah, I think you also, though, in these times with what's going on, have to have a level of competence in foreign policy, and I think Mitch Daniels recognizes that he's overshadowed by Barack Obama in that regard, so I think it does have a bearing.
Moving on, Republican Mike Pence became the first formal candidate in the 2012 race for governor this week. Congressman Pence scheduled an invitation-only conference call with supporters for Monday, but then postponed it until Thursday because of the death of Osama bin Laden. His message on the call was carefully scripted and matched a message in a video on his website.
But I wanted you to be the first to know I'm in this race.
I wanted you to be the first to know that I'm in this race. We think now is the time to move forward. And any real Hoosier knows that every big race begins in May anyway.
Mike McDaniel, did Mike Pence get lugered?
I love that. Did Mike Pence get lugered? No, well,
actually. You better explain that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. His big announcement was overshadowed by world events.
Well,
right?
Sure. I mean, you're not going to have an announcement of any kind on that day. First of all, this wasn't his announcement. His announcement was going to be on June 11th. This was his call to his committee members saying, yes, I am going to pull the trigger.
Well, this was opening the door for donations, right?
Exactly. Well, you got to start raising money. Immediately, right. You're going to raise $18 million. You got to start as soon as you can, because we have this goofy, you know, statute in Indiana that says they can't raise money during a legislative session, which is nutty.
He had to start. I said that before.
Yeah. I think
he'll
it's
say it again.
Crazy.
They didn't
Many
change
times.
It, and they didn't change it.
No.
Right? Okay, but he needed to do something this week because, in part, there were rumors out there that he was negotiating with Fox News. So you got to kill the rumors. You got to let everybody know you mean this and start raising money. But so you try to do something on Monday, and you got to wait till Thursday, and then you got to phone it in till Washington. That nobody will remember this in 2 months, though.
Well,
right?
you get a double hit.
Except it's symptomatic. I mean, he didn't even care enough to come back to Indiana to make the announcement. You know, anybody looking at this knows he doesn't want to be governor. He wants to use governor as a stepping stone to be president. And that, you know, he's so Washington that he thinks it's okay to do a conference call to announce a candidacy like that. Not even to come back to the states. So, you know, he can do what he can do. But I think people are tired of the Washington partisanship. And he epitomizes it. So we'll see whether he sells well.
The Republican Party put up a video. The Democratic Party put up a video of Pence making statements about shutting the government down. They're trying to suggest that he's an extremist and what we need.
Suggest.
And that we need a middle-of-the-road politician to govern. What do you think of their approach out of the blocks here?
Well, I think it's interesting, too, you know, Ann's point about he's Washington, and he doesn't really want to be governor. He wants to be, president of the United States. And they're doing all they can to dismiss Pence, his interest and or his positions. And I think it's interesting, but my real problem, Jim, is I can't figure out how to verb one of these terms. Like you had Lugard and she had Washington. I got nothing.
You just need a little bit more creativity.
And a little history. You know, Dick Lugard was going to make his announcement for president.
There. I was standing there when that happened.
No, it was the Oklahoma City bomber.
That's right. And the TV truck started to drive away from the announcement. Yeah, I understand what getting Lugard is.
Okay, sorry.
You could say the question here is, will he get Lugard or will he get Murdoch'd? Because if you look ahead to...
another verb.
Well, I'm making up another... I'm going to go down that path that Jim went down. I mean, clearly he's got to be watching with more than a casual interest the race that's unfolding elsewhere on the ticket with the U.S. Senate race that's shaped up between Dick Lugar and Richard Murdoch, who wants to unseat him, because it does put... here you have Richard Lugar, who's arguably the biggest vote getter probably in Indiana political history, time in and time out. But then you also have the fact that Mike Pence is the Republican liaison in the House, U.S. House, to the Tea Party, which, of course, is firmly in the camp of Richard Murdoch. It's an interesting dynamic.
Well, there are some other interesting dynamics. I mean, Dan Coats won't get in the Senate primary, but he issued a statement immediately saying that, we need my man Mike. When, Steve Carter's still out there, Jim Wallace is still out there on the Republican side.
I don't know that, I haven't heard that Steve Carter's going to pull that trigger. I don't even know if he's still looking at it or not. But, Mike Pence is probably one of the party's best communicators. He also has the ability to raise a lot of money. And he's going to be a formidable candidate for governor, which is why the Democrats who don't have the governor, either House of Legislature or any statewide office, all they can do is slime him immediately.
Well, we'll have a statewide office shortly when your guy gets convicted.
Well, you don't have any of them.
In any event.
John Gregg's out there on the Democratic
side.
Does he need to pull the trigger?
I think he needs to do it pretty soon if he's going to do it. But he's doing everything he's supposed to do to get ready for that. And I think it's interesting. It's not just Coates abandoning Lugar here. I think Pence will abandon Lugar, too, and go with Murdoch, which I think is a very serious mistake on both their parts.
I'm not sure he would, because if you get to the general election, I think
Murdoch's fundraising needs to improve first.
Yeah, better.
Now, if you're Mike Pence, I think, when all is said and done, you probably want to run on the same ticket, I'm guessing, with Dick Lugar, because of, it doesn't have the antagonism that clearly a Murdoch nomination would.
The antagonism. You think Mike Pence isn't going to be antagonistic to mainstream Republicans? Guess again.
Time now for viewer
feedback. I'm
talking
about Democrats. He's antagonistic.
Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, will Mike Pence moderate his views as he runs for governor? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, he is incapable. Last week's question was, will more options lead to better public schools? 30% said yes, 61% said no, 9% said options are important regardless. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Governor Mitch Daniels was in Washington this week promoting changes to Indiana's educational system. He spoke at the American Enterprise Institute. The governor outlined new laws passed last week that include changes to student testing and teacher rights, school vouchers, and charter schools.
Many of us in Indiana are very uplifted this week. We believe that we have done some things that will make a profound difference in the lives of children in our state, will make a significant difference in the economic prospects of our state if we can implement them well.
John Ketzenberger, a lot of people expected Daniels to talk more about a potential run for president in that speech. Why didn't he?
Well, I think the news of the week may have had an effect on some of that, but I still don't think he's reached an agreement. And he said before he went to this this Washington East Coast swing that he was a couple of weeks out from making an announcement. So, I think people were hoping that he would say more, and they figured rightly that he was going to be in Washington, had a friendly crowd, it made a lot of sense. But I just don't think it fit his timeline yet, and the events of the week made it really a bad idea.
Yeah, he says he hasn't made up his mind about running for president yet, says that now he's going to apply himself, and also says he doesn't think it's too late.
Well, I think he's right about that. Clearly not too late. In a normal, quote-unquote normal cycle, at least what we've seen in the past 4, 8, 12, 16 years, and back even a few decades beyond that, it would have been too late probably because, a lot of us sat here and thought that, gee, if he's not going to go campaign in Iowa and New Hampshire during the General Assembly, he'll be way behind. I mean, people will have already locked up the support of county chairs and delegates out there at those caucuses and those primaries. He's not behind at all. I mean, there was a first debate this week for Republican presidential candidates sat down in South Carolina, and it was a cast of people that generally people had not heard of. Stephen Colbert joked that there are still good seats available on the stage. Yeah. Behind the lectern, if you turn
down the sound, I'm guessing most Republican voters could not have named four out of the five.
Yeah, I don't think he's missing a beat in that regard. But it was fun to watch the National Press Corps try to read the tea leaves this week, because some reached the conclusion, well, he sounds presidential. Others, you read the next blog, clearly he doesn't sound presidential. He's not interested in so.
Months ago, I asked Mitch Daniels if by not deciding he might actually be deciding that you know the train's going to leave without him, and he said maybe. I mean, even if he's trying to keep the door open here, doesn't he have to start doing some things?
Well, I mean, your question was a good one. I mean, you know, a lot of people, traditional conventional wisdom was you need to be out there doing these things, but because the field hadn't solidified, this is still a wide open affair, and if he would decide to get in it sometime this month. And he may. I think he is going to make a decision before the end of the month's over. If he decides to get in before the end of this month, he can still win this thing because it has not solidified. And there is no real front runner. The Romney thing, even though he's showing up as first in all the polls, he's not getting more than about 20% or 30% at the maximum. So this thing's an open deal. And if he would get in it, he could win it. And you know, for months I've been saying I didn't think he was going to run. I'm not so sure now. I think he may actually be getting in this race.
Well, he's sure thinking about it. What do you think he goes?
I don't think he goes, because I think he looks at it realistically and decides he can't win the nomination. I mean, the fact that he was talking about education isn't rather than presidential isn't surprising. It's an area he feels comfortable. He thinks he's done something that's going to make public education better. I disagree, but that's what he thinks. And, you know, and he was out there anyway to accept the Arab American League Award.
So, Syrian, I mean, there American, were Syrian and the American Reagan Award and the Columbia
so, you,
School
So, you know,
Award.
I mean, there were reasons for him to be out there unrelated to the presidential. I think he's still waiting for a draft. Those things don't happen anymore. He has to get down in the trenches, and he has to give the Republican primary voters the same red meat that they all want.
Well, that Planned Parenthood bill is going to do that, isn't it?
Well, it's going to cost him, too, though, because he's been able to tell moderate Republicans that he really is a moderate. Did you see Mickey Maurer's article? An editorial bad mouthing the entire General Assembly for passing that. What does he say to his governor when he signs it?
Moving on, the Inspector General cleared Charlie White of wrongdoing in one case this week, and the State Recount Commission restarted another investigation into White's eligibility to serve. Faced with a court order to do so, the State Recount Commission reversed an earlier decision and began an investigation into Charlie White's voter registration. The Republican chairman pledged to be fair.
I will promise you this is not a partisan process.
But White's attorney is asking the state appeals court to stop this proceeding. Because White faces a 7-count indictment for charges that include voter fraud, his attorney says he could be forced to incriminate himself in front of the recount commission.
Until the criminal case is concluded, then he is presented with an unconscionable dilemma.
The legal wranglings could soon lead from here to the state Supreme Court. Okay, now back to what I picked up on at the beginning here. White was accused of wrongdoing for looking at the report that Todd Rokita, his predecessor, did about his voter registration. He was cleared of wrongdoing for looking at it, and the Inspector General said that he could then make it public, and it showed that it was inconclusive. What was the most significant development this week with regard to Charlie White?
Well, with that, the release of that 238-page report, sure, there was some more fodder there. They had a timeline. Even though they couldn't subpoena, didn't have subpoena power, couldn't actually talk to Charlie White for that report, there was a very detailed timeline and some other verbiage.
They could. They didn't attempt to,
And there's some other verbiage that, you know, could have or will be very appealing to Democrats and to the critics of Charlie White. But I think the bigger, more significant, more profound development was probably what you talked about with the legal tussle between James Bopp, Charlie White's attorney, who wants to do everything he can to have the Court of Appeals put the brakes on the commission proceedings, the recount commission, until the August criminal proceedings start, because it does raise a very interesting question. I'm no lawyer, but it does raise all kinds of issues. Yeah. I don't bill $400 an hour like you either, though. Well, but you know,
you get what you pay for.
That's true. I'll give you that.
This isn't going well for Charlie White.
I think, as you noted in your blog this week, Jim, that Charlie White's week was summed up in one little incident that occurred on Election Day. You know, he said that elections aren't a big part of his job, but he is the chief election officer. We had a primary on Tuesday. They put out a press release to try to help folks across the state if they had questions. It was an 866 number. They accidentally put an 800 number, and it connected to a sex line. I think that kind of sums up the week that Charlie had.
You know what, John, that's a good point. But just
that might be
Luger. That may actually explain this whole thing going back several years, because if that number was in place, you know, a year or two ago, and he was calling up to figure out where to vote in Fishers, he couldn't get the information. He couldn't get the information.
The release of the Rakita report.
It shows that Rakita, excuse the expression, whitewashed it, is really what it comes down to. Charlie White knew that he wasn't living where he said he was living. He knew he lied. That's all it takes for a conviction criminally. But besides that, there are two different standards of proof here. He's the one choosing to stay in the office, okay, while this is going on. And he is exposing himself to attack on both ways. It's too bad, okay? But that's the way the games are played. And BOP is not going to be able to stop this proceeding because they have a right to throw him out. He was not eligible to be on the ballot in the first place. And if Rakita had done his job instead of whitewashing it, he wouldn't be the Secretary of State.
This can't be fun for Republicans to watch.
Look, the commission is working its process. Judge Rosenberg set a date of July 6th. They've set their hearing for the 21st. And they also released the Rakita report. They're the ones that asked that it be released and was released within 24 hours. Right. So they're doing what they're supposed to be doing to get this dealt with, and it's going to happen on time.
So then they'll vacate the Secretary of State's office and Bob
will
be Secretary of State.
I'm not sure, though, that you can say the commission is working with great dispatch.
But
the judge a couple weeks ago basically held them, took them to task, and said, hey, come on, guys, you're not doing anything here. You're not moving at all.
Well, they are back on it, and White's attorneys are trying to stop it.
Right, yeah.
Primary election this week produced lots of stories. Here's just one. Four-term Republican Mayor Charles Henderson of Greenwood lost to former policeman Mark Myers. Myers received 50% of the vote to Henderson's 33%. Myers' father served as mayor of Greenwood in the late 70s.
And to have my kids going out door to door with me, it's just been awesome, a great remembrance and a legacy I want to live up to for my dad.
Mark Myers there. Mike McDaniel, any big lessons to be learned from this primary election?
Nobody was paying attention overall statewide. Now, there were some pockets where we had real primary fights, like in South Bend and some other places. But this is the lowest number of incumbents to lose primary fights since 1991. 10 incumbent mayors got beat on Election Day. 7 Democrats, 3 Republicans. Got beat on Election Day. That's the lowest number we've had in years. And so, people just aren't paying attention to this cycle.
Well, 2010 was all about change. 2008 was all about change.
And nothing's going on right now except in those places where you've had those fights that generate a lot of activity.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. I think people weren't paying attention. They certainly didn't come out to vote. And I think that's unfortunate. I really do.
You know, I agree. That is unfortunate that there isn't a higher turnout. And you're right about the low number, relatively speaking, of incumbents who got defeated. But we should also point out that there will be a lot of new faces because there was probably an unusually large number of incumbents who took themselves out, whether, up in Gary, down in Evansville, South Bend, lots of places where the incumbent was not, by choice, choosing to run.
All right, time for our roundtable. Winners and losers from the primary election. Big winner, Mike.
I think Jim Brainerd, he's basically assured a fifth term as mayor of Carmel.
Oh, I think Melina Kennedy and Fred Nation and Pete Buttigieg, because they won overwhelmingly, and it'll mend the party fights from the primary.
Fred Nation in Terre Haute, Pete Buttigieg in South Bend.
I'll agree with all those and add Mark Cruzan, because he had a pretty good primary challenge in Bloomington, and that's essentially the mayoral race, and so he survived that for another term.
Those are all good picks. Also, Karen Freeman Wilson, first African-American woman, won the Democratic primary in Gary, which means basically
she wins in November. Get to November. We still got to get to November. But
for all practical purposes, she'll
All right, Biggest Loser.
I'd say Henderson, because Henderson did what the governor asked him to do. He tried to consolidate government, and he got out there on a limb, and the governor sawed it off, gave him absolutely no help, and left him out there alone.
Right. First of all, that's not what beat Henderson, but the losers are clearly the 10 incumbent mayors who lost. That's, when you're an incumbent mayor and lose, that's a hard thing in a primary.
John?
I think that's right. There weren't many that lost, but those who did probably want to ask some serious questions about how they got in that predicament to begin with.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I also think that John Assaturo, who was an opponent of Jim Brainerd and Carmel, put out a mailer that was truly offensive, conflating Brainerd's picture with several terrorists, and I think that I've clarified the whole thing. I apologize, Mayor.
Ryan Dvorak in South Bend's on the list. He should have had an advantage there, maybe, and came in third. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.